You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Maintaining peace within a family is sometimes difficult, and during the holidays it can be even trickier. But in the play Other Desert Cities, for the Wyeth family, coming home for the holidays becomes an all-out war in which long-standing grievances are aired and secrets are revealed. John Robin Bates' play is being performed at the Mitzi E. Newhouse Theater and Lincoln Center now through the 27th of this month, and it features a glittering cast. Joining me now are two of those amazing actors, Stacy Keach, who plays Lyman, Elizabeth Marvel, who plays his daughter Brooke, and I'm very pleased to welcome both of you to our show today.
Thank
Hello.
Thank you.
Were you all cast at the same time, the two of you, Starkad Channing, Linda Lavin, Thomas Sadowski?
It's a good question. I don't know if we were all cast at once, but I remember when I was cast, asking who else was going to be in the play, and I was told that Elizabeth was going to be in the play, who coincidentally plays my daughter in a series called Lights Out on television.
Mm-hmm. On FX, isn't it?
Yeah, just a total coincidence. And that Starkad and Linda and I think Tom was the last to be cast.
I think so, yeah.
And had you had you worked with any of the other people before?
I'd worked with Linda. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I had not. I had worked with no one but Stacy. Yeah.
Well, in his review in the New York Times, Ben Brantley advised seeing it five times so you can feast on each individual performance. I found myself sometimes just looking at Linda Lavin lying on a couch because even there, there was acting. I don't know, just amazing.
She does Elizabeth, great couch acting.
Great sleeping. She sleeps like nobody.
You said, Elizabeth, that you turned to Spalding Gray material to help you prepare for the play. What was it about his work that you found useful?
Well, it's interesting. When I would walk the halls of Lincoln Center downstairs on my way to rehearsal every day, they have a series of giant play posters from all of their productions. And Spalding staged most of his pieces there. If he wasn't doing them at the Performing Garage with the Worcester Group, he was doing them at Lincoln Center. That was his other home. And I kept passing these images of Spalding, and it one day it just unlocked something for me. And I started reading his writings and watching some of his tape material. And there's a connection from what actually happened to the man with
There's a plot similarity, and
there is
with that one of the brother who's dead jumped off of a boat, and that's how Spalding killed himself.
That's right. But also just the bravery of being a writer and what that takes. That it is your responsibility to speak your truth as a writer, and it might not make you liked or popular, and that's a very intense place to be, and such a different one from a performer. So also trying to get inside that kind of a head, I found Spalding a great conduit for me.
Well, Brooke is a writer who's recovering from a nervous breakdown and depression that had crippled her, and of course Spalding had similar experiences.
Right.
How fragile is she when she walks into her parents' home for the first time in 6 years?
It depends on the day I'm having.
So it changes every day? Because I've spoken to other actors who've told me, some say, I like it to be exactly the same every night, and others have said, part of the thrill of acting is you never know what you're going to be responding to from one of the other actors in the cast.
I think that this cast responds more to the latter. Mm-hmm. I think it's always new and fresh and different.
So I have to go five times just to see all the different versions?
Well, yeah. within the context of certain parameters that are set. But nevertheless, rhythms, tone, emotional intensity, those things are all variables that change from performance to performance.
Well, your character, Lyman, used to be an actor before he became involved in Republican politics. Yeah. During the course of your career, have you known any of those people? In California alone, I was thinking, there's George Murphy, Ronald Reagan, Arnold Schwarzenegger, Clint Eastwood, Sonny Bono, and then, of course, outside of California, Fred Thompson.
Yeah, those are all, yeah.
Did you know any of those people?
Yeah, I know Fred. I knew Sonny. This character is based on another actor politician, John Gavin. Mm-hmm. And that's who Robbie Bates really, he told me that it was his sort of his his template model for this character.
Because he became a diplomat as well. He became ambassador to Mexico, if I remember.
That's correct. And just in terms of function, not in any other context, but just in terms of somebody who was in the Reagan administration and was an actor who was a friend of Reagan's, apparently, who then became an ambassador.
Well, Lyman and his wife, Polly, who's played by Starkey Channing, met in Hollywood. Were they a product of the old Hollywood, the one that gave Ronald Reagan his start?
I think so, yeah. I think that they were very much a part of that whole initial, you know, Republican crowd. And from a personal perspective, I grew up in a Republican family in Los Angeles and took trips to Palm Springs on many occasions, Easter and Christmas. And
so where did you go wrong, Stacey?
Where did he go right?
Or left.
Yeah, or left, yeah.
Well, you recently played Richard Nixon in the U.S. tour
of right,
Frost
did,
Nixon.
Yes,
did that help you get into Lyman's character?
Yes, I did. Yeah, that did it. Well, to a certain extent. But, you know, I played radical lefties, too. I mean, McBird, Johnson, back in the old days.
Was your family upset?
Yes.
Because the family here is upset by the fact that their kids have become leftists.
Yeah, you know, it wasn't until I achieved a modicum of success that they finally endorsed my, you know, posture in it.
Elizabeth, you often play dramatic roles, but there's a lot of humor in this play, and you get to deliver some really good laugh lines.
Bless your heart.
Is that a challenge?
No, it's a joy. It's a pleasure. Yeah. I'm so happy to be taken off the leash and allowed to just be easy and funny.
Well, after having been in a revival of The Little Foxes by Lillian Hellman, where...
Although I must say, to my own credit,
that?
I did. I was quite funny in that.
Well, we mentioned that Lyman and Polly have had another son, Henry, and I mentioned that he died by jumping off a boat. Mm-hmm. And what's happened is this has been the story that none of them have been willing to deal with until... Right. Your character, Elizabeth, forces the issue here.
Right.
Right.
Why haven't they been able to?
I think a lot of reasons. I think there was definitely a certain amount of guilt. But they're also hiding something that I don't think we should reveal at this particular time. But they are keeping a secret.
The surprise at the end did come as a surprise. You know, you usually can predict where something is going.
Which is good, I think. I think from a theatrical point of view, certainly. I think that's great to Robbie's tribute to, you know, to...
Well, he's also written some very witty lines here.
Oh, yes. Very.
Do you think this comes out of his experience on television or?
Perhaps, because he does have, I mean, there's a certain rhythm. I mean, there's a certain one laugh upon another. There's big sections where it's a laugh, literally a laugh a minute. I mean.
It doesn't hurt that you have this cast.
No, it doesn't.
No. I mean, Starkey Channing and Linda Lavin, they can get a laugh out of, you know, out of King Lear.
That's
right. Exactly.
That's right. But something, too, that's really wonderful that I think makes it work is that we all have an understanding of the necessity of velocity when you're doing this kind of language and material. We all are stage animals, so we understand the need for reaching the language, for using the language, but also an understanding of the rhythm and the pace and that it needs to fly, it needs to move, it needs to ping off each other. And because of the space, I'm so glad you got to see it as it is now in this space, because I think it's a very special experience.
You performed it elsewhere?
No. But if it does go
elsewhere.
Oh, it
may very well go to Broadway because it is a hit.
It may. But but this current space that it's in is so special because it's almost in the round. And it makes it so alive and makes everyone be able to – it really does feel like being in a living room.
And the audience is with us in the living room.
Exactly.
Yeah, well, the set is very effective.
It's a wonderful set,
It also takes place in Palm Springs, which is one of the oddest towns I've ever been to, because as you enter the town, there are all of these, at least the last time I went, there were all of these billboards that were remembering Jerry Ford with great fondness. And then I was walking down the street and there was a real estate office that specialized in finding housing for gays only. So you have this old line Republican town, and then this other town over there. But the opening line of the play, which was not intended as a laugh line, has been one of the great laugh lines in theater, just because
of the weather.
It's about how the weather back east is lousy.
Yeah, that's right.
And we get off to a very good start.
We do, especially with the winter we're having.
Yeah,
Elizabeth, your character Brooke walks into her parents' house carrying the equivalent of a time bomb.
Mm-hmm.
Does she really think that her family will give her their blessing to publish a book about them and the loss of her brother Henry? Is she being naive, or perhaps even
mean
on some level?
It's hard to be objective in the way that you can be as a viewer. I can't judge her being inside of her, but I wouldn't say she's being naive. I would say she's being incredibly hopeful, proactive, understanding that you're only as sick as your secrets, and trying to heal the family, trying to hold everyone's hand to walk forward into the pain head on, being willing to take whatever blows come, and knowing and believing, I think, in deep inside of her, that as ugly as it may be, as much as it may cost everyone, it's ultimately the right thing for the family.
But they won't talk about it with each other. They won't talk about
That's
it with
right.
her. Why would they ever accept her talking about it with the rest of the world?
Honestly, I don't think it's an uncommon phenomenon especially for the youngest in a family. I'm the youngest in my family. Brooke is not. But I think it's not an uncommon phenomenon. Maybe it's not even about birth order. But for a child, one child to be the designated truth teller in a family, I don't think it's an uncommon phenomenon.
Well, I actually come from a family where we have my brother is a writer, and he writes about family matters. And over the years, it has caused some trouble for him. And his response has been, well, I'm a writer. This is what I do. And
that's right.
I try to be as fair to everybody, and that's all I can do.
Well, and I also
– That's why we don't talk to each other anymore.
Well, and that's a completely understandable response. But it's very interesting. I'm blessed with having a lot of writers in my life, and I talk to a lot of them while working on this play. And one friend of mine said, you know, if it's a good story – if it's actually, you can feel when it's something that's hot, and you will defend it with your life, no matter what it is, if it's a good story.
Well, it's interesting that three of the characters here are writers, the women.
That's
all
right.
Three of the women are writers, but the other two, Polly, your wife in the play, Stacey, and her sister, Silda, used to write movie series, which I guess was some kind of
the Hillary teen series,
yeah. Right?
Yeah,
sort of like a Gidget life.
Yeah, yeah.
And they had a very commercial sensibility,
right.
But and that's the other side of writing. And here they're suddenly dealing with a memoir that.
Well, and that's another thing about this is Brooke did not set out to write a memoir. It was not an intentional choice. She stopped writing for a long time, and this, when she sat down to start writing again, she was trying to write a novel, trying to write a piece of fiction, and this is the story that kept coming forward until she couldn't fight it anymore, this is what came out.
As Lyman, I tend to defend her choice to write a memoir because I'm hoping that even though it's dealing with issues that were very painful for us, that I understand that in many ways this is something she needed to do to overcome her problems, her depression, and that she's writing about us in a very loving way.
Yeah.
However,
but you send out all sorts of mixed signals, your character.
Oh, absolutely.
This is the loving father side, but then you refuse to read the book.
Right.
And
right.
You also quite reasonably see this as something that could be totally destructive. And we have to take a little break, but we just want to make the point that part of the fun of the play is that we keep on siding with different people over the course of the play. No one person is the spokesperson for Robbie Bates and or for the audience, and that's part of the fun of watching this play.
Yes.
I agree.
My guests are Stacy Keach and Elizabeth Marvel from Other Desert Cities, which is running now through February 27th. Not much more time, unfortunately.
After this weekend.
At the Mitzi E. Newhouse Theater at Lincoln Center. If you want more information about tickets and such, you can visit our show page at WNYC.org. We'll be right back after this. We're back with Elizabeth Marvel and Stacy Keach, two of the five cast members of Other Desert Cities, which is running now through the 27th of this month at the Mitzi E. Newhouse Theater at Lincoln Center, the other cast members being Starkid Channing, Linda Lavin, and Thomas Sadusky. And reviews have remarked on the family dynamic, how much of that was in the script and how much of it is the chemistry that emerged through the rehearsal process.
The rehearsal process was fascinating. It really was. And I think that during the course of that period, thanks to largely to Joe Mantello and Robbie
the
Bates,
director,
who was present, mm-hmm. present for most of it, we had an opportunity to explore different alternatives, different possibilities of ways of playing scenes. And in the course of that that journey of exploration, we began to develop our relationships as a family.
And it is, I guess, when you put actors of this quality together, it's a lot easier.
Oh, well.
Well, maybe it's everybody for himself. I don't know.
No, I think in this case we were all doing a little of both. You know, I think everybody had to sort of balance between themselves and what their function is with everybody else. But, yeah.
In a New York Times article, Linda Lavin, who plays Aunt Silda, described how you, Elizabeth, worked closely with Thomas Sadusky, who plays your brother Tripp, on your big scene together. Why was it so important to get that scene in particular in place, or did you work that way on all the
scenes? You know, honestly, it wasn't there was no plan behind it. There was no method. We just often found ourselves in the space, and we just look at each other and say, let's just give it a whirl, because I think we were both motivated to just find that kind of second nature ease that you have with siblings where you just take each other for granted. And we so wanted to make that palpable for people. And we knew that the more we just hung out and went through our work together, the more easy it would be in the playing.
To some degree, doing something in this theater is like doing something in London at that theater in Sloane Square, where you get a month, and then if people like it, you wind up going to the West End. But is there any guarantee that this cast would all be able to stay together to move to a Broadway house?
Never a guarantee. No, not necessarily. No, I don't think so. No, I mean, it's still very much up in the air. We've been told that there's an incentive to do so, but we don't know what the time frame is going to be, or if any of us are going to be doing other things or whatever.
Well, the Mitzi Newhouse is a fairly small theater, and I would think that one of the pleasures would be that you can actually gauge how the audience is reacting to everything, because they're practically in your living room.
They really are. They're right there.
And they don't turn off their cell phones all the time.
They don't. Bless their hearts. Yeah. They don't. But no, it's fantastic. I mean, last night there were so many gasps.
Yeah,
and so I can hear people crying all through the final movement of the play. I hear, I feel them breathing.
Yeah,
it's wonderful.
And that's something you don't get if you go to a big Broadway house.
That's right.
You don't. You lose that.
People will no longer be in the living room with us on a Broadway stage.
But it does shift to something different.
Different, exactly.
And that too is exciting.
Yeah.
Well, first of all, you have to project a bit more to be heard in the back of the
Well, that's
the
no
larger
problem
theater.
With any of these folks.
But I wonder if hearing the audience also has the opposite effect, kind of like distracts you, because there you are in this character and suddenly you're hearing people
from time to time
gasping or
the cell phones.
So close. Well, the cell phones, of course.
The hacking.
You know, it's amazing.
When programs drop on the floor right in front of your exit.
In your living room, suddenly a playbill falls.
Do you ever wonder why before every performance, every theater, they make a big thing about turning off your
incredible.
Cell phone, and
it's
then
incredible.
People don't turn them off.
But people still sit and text. They text during plays now.
Well, they want to tweet. Elizabeth Marvel just did an incredible line read on.
Yeah. I think they should be, you know, you should check them at the door.
Yes, confiscate them.
Like guns.
You know, exactly. Like,
turn in your, you know, turn in your weapon.
That's right.
You know? But, or if something goes off, and they may, you know, have a mandate. You, if your cell phone goes off, you're going to be removed immediately.
Mm-hmm. In fact, Patti LuPone actually stopped a play once and a performance of Gypsy and insisted that somebody be removed.
You know, it's interesting. I just saw Keith Jarrett at Carnegie Hall a few weeks ago, and he actually stopped in the middle of a piece and sort of bowed and left stage for about 10 minutes and came back on and spoke to the audience and said, I need you to understand that I was playing a piece of music that had to be quiet. And the only choice I had was to play it louder. And that would be a disservice to the music and to you as the audience. And you need to understand that you have a responsibility. As I have a responsibility to you, you have a responsibility to this experience. And I think this day and age, audiences sometimes don't quite understand. Because for me, I'm like, I have bat radar when I'm on stage. I hear everything.
The British complain about the applause when people come out, when they make their entrance, because they say, who are you applauding, the actor or the character?
Right.
No, that is and then
when I had Jonathan Miller said that on the show, we got a number of angry emails from people who said, who is he to tell me how to react when I'm at the theater?
And fair enough.
I agree. It's our tradition. Mm-hmm. It's not theirs, it's ours.
Right. He'd also criticize the standing ovations in every play, good, bad, and indifferent.
Well, he sounds grumpy. I'll take a standing ovation any day.
Yeah, of course.
The costumes are by David Zinn, and they tell the audience a lot
about David Zinn is
the characters. That does help, right? You walk in, you're wearing a certain kind of clothing, and people know immediately who you are.
Absolutely. He is such an amazing designer, because he also, for many productions, he does the set as well. For this one, he didn't. But he has such a great comprehension of detail and subtlety. And I can't say enough about David Zinn.
I concur heartily.
In his glowing review in the New York Times, Ben Brantley described the play as belonging to an earlier era. From the 20s through the 50s. Do you see that this as being one of those, what he called, literate, thoughtful, well-tailored, topical dramas?
Absolutely. And I think because it has a wonderful twist at the end, that it does emulate some of those thrillers of the, you know, I mean, I think of Journey's End and, you know, those old chestnut dramas that had a little spicy twist at the end, which Robbie delivers.
Now, tell us a bit about the FX series Lights Out, which premiered last month.
Yes, we're in our fourth episode. We're on Tuesday nights at 10 o'clock,
and what is the?
It's gotten
what is
wonderful
Lights Out?
Response so far.
Yeah, fantastic reviews.
Yeah.
It's great. It's a family drama about a heavyweight fighter and his comeback and his family. And I think it speaks so well to our time, because it's about someone trying to do what's best for their family, really.
And in many ways, I think this family is a metaphor for America.
Exactly.
Ex-heavyweight champion, now down on their luck, fighting to survive, broke, not able to pay the rent, and trying to get back in the ring.
But quite different from The Fighter, interestingly. You know, it's that we have these two different things coming along the same time. Suddenly prize fighting is a topic for popular art again.
Mm-hmm. But it is also a great metaphor for America right now.
Yeah.
But I was also thinking about the fact that it's on FX.
Yeah.
That we're seeing some of the most interesting drama now
being
done on AMC, too. On FX, on some of the other Sundance.
That's right.
And not on NBC, ABC, Fox, or CBS.
There's not as much freedom to express what's really going on with people in their hearts and their minds and their souls. And
there's as much risk. They won't go out on a limb to hire the actors that they will on cable. And also the kind of writing they can do it's very exciting. And a beautiful thing about this show, too, is the fights, I must say. I'm a Quaker, and I don't know much about fighting, but they really are remarkable on this show.
They're well staged, beautifully staged,
Well, I want to thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
I'm hoping that it does get moved to another theater because more people should see the play. It's just it's a brilliant play, and the performances are just amazing. The performances of all cast members, but I've had the great honor today to speak to two of them, Elizabeth Marvel and Stacey Keach. It's Other Desert Cities, and it's running through just the 27th. I don't know if it's you can even get a ticket. I hope that there's still a few tickets available.
I'm not one to say don't try.
That's right. Come on down.
Well, if you want more information about tickets, you can visit our show page at WNYC.org. Thank you both again.
Thank you.
Thank you.